This is the season for presidential pardons, as we just made reference to, and that may be good news for some convicts, but for some judges and juries, it may be a time of dread, a period when verdicts and sentences get washed away with the stroke of a sympathetic pen. So if you were a judge or juror, how would a presidential pardon make you feel? We pose that question now to our regular News and Notes contributor, Judge Lynn Toler, the star of TV's Divorce Court. Judge Toler, nice to have you.
How are you, Tony?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Let's start by talking about that pardon of rapper John Forte. President Bush, as we said, commuted his 14-year sentence for possessing 31 pounds of liquid cocaine with the intent to distribute. He had already served 7 years. He's due to be released on the 22nd of December. What's your reaction when a president, or what, not yours personally necessarily, but what do judges think when presidential pardons come along in this fashion?
I'm not really sure what judges in general think, because I really never had a long conversation or any conversation with a group of judges about that. I get a little offended about the Fortes of this world. There is a process for presidential pardons, petitions. It's not just who you know, but it is, in the end, who lobbies for you when you do that. Such a large amount of cocaine, I have a little trouble with that. The idea of presidential pardons, and governors can do it as well on the state level, doesn't offend me as much as you might think, simply because although we have a good system of justice, it is run by human beings and as such is fallible. And no matter what you do, sometimes it just doesn't work out right. Kimba Smith. You know what I mean? There mm-hmm. has to be somebody at the end of the line that could say, despite all of our checks and balances, the system did not work in this circumstance, and I need to just step in and make it right. So I'm not offended by the ability to do it. Sometimes, however, I'm offended by those who actually are recipients of that.
And they're recipients not because they're deserving necessarily, but because of who their connections may be or how they're able to work the system.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a process. It's not just who can get a call into the president. There is a process. But when you have famous people and money and all of that, as in throughout the entire justice system, that process is a little more gentle and kind-hearted to you.
Well, let's talk about something else that was intended to be gentle and kind-hearted. It's the Safe Haven Law. Although some parents obviously have been taking it to a place that it was not intended to be taken by the legislators who passed it. In Nebraska, for example, the law passed this year would let parents drop unwanted children off at hospitals and police stations. State would step in, take care of them. Every state in the union has a version of a safe haven law. But in Nebraska, lawmakers did not include an age limit, and that seemed to have been the problem, correct?
Correct. They were trying to be all inclusive and saying, you know, should there be a cutoff line at which we'll allow, you know, we will not try to give safe haven to children who are abandoned. And it was well intended, but I don't think they had a good concept of parenthood in this day and age, where we don't have those layers and layers of family and generations together and uncles and who can take care of everybody, and how frustrating 17 can be. And they needed an age limit on it and found out quickly that they would have to include one.
To say that it was remarkable is an understatement, that 34 kids were dropped off between July and November, some of them as old as 17
right.
years old. They could not have imagined that parents would do this, I suppose, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't think they could have imagined that parents would have done that. And I think that was an honest failure not to understand that in this day and age, we are now seeing a generation of children that were had by a generation of children. Back in my day, having a kid outside of wedlock or younger was an outrageous thing. And we circled the wagons and all of that. But now it's not that uncommon. So you have, I think, a generation of parents that are unprepared for the trials and tribulations. And trust me, I've had six teenagers, it felt like 16, six teenagers come through my house, and it is an all-day, every day struggle and battle. And when you were young, when you started and didn't have the patience and the consistency and stability, they're even worse when they become teenagers. And we have to take a look at that as a society and see how we're going to deal with that.
It raises the question, I think, Judge Toler, I'd like to get your response, of whether or not a law like this makes sense regardless of the age. Does it?
I don't think so, and I'll tell you why. At any given point in time, I would have liked to gotten rid of my kids. Of course, I wouldn't have done it. I got a husband, a house, and all that, and I got a backup. But that's too easy and out. And when you have a generation of parents who haven't had the stability and the training, if we do that, it will crush whatever foster system care system that's already under the gun. It will just fall in on itself. What we need to do is establish support systems for families of, you know, young parents and teach them how to better deal with their children from, you know, the word go all the way into 18, because that's where the failure is. You can't just drop them off.
Isn't there a system in place to do that already? And I'm not talking necessarily about foster parenting, but aren't there support systems already in place for parents?
They are, but I don't think they're as comprehensive. I think things have to go real wrong before those support systems fall into place, and I think we need to learn more on I remember when I was in high school, there was a course called Life and Family Living. It's about just how to live and raising people and all that. We don't do that as a course in practice, only when things start to go bad. So I think earlier education and more comprehensive education as what it is parenting involves would be necessary.
Is there a racial element to this as we bring our conversation to a close? Meaning, are there more black parents taking advantage of this, white parents, Latinos? Do we know even?
I don't know. The law was in Nebraska. I don't know. I don't think that's a place where there's a great diversity of people, but I really, really don't know.
You know, one of the other things, apparently, the issues that children are having with mental health, and that some families, parents, are not able to deal with their children who are suffering in that regard. Could you briefly speak to what should be done for them?
I mean, they do have support systems for the National Alliance of the Mentally Ill. I used to belong to it. I was on the board because I was in a family with a mentally ill parent. So those systems are in place. Of course, nobody has enough money and nobody has enough time. But I think these days we are becoming more and more cognizant of the mentally ill and trying to have a health system that now cares for them as they do for other illnesses, because it's the same thing.
All right. Well, we have the Safe Haven Law, but it certainly has its challenges. We'll keep our eyes on it to see how it evolves. Judge Toler, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Judge Lynn Toler is the star of Divorce Court and author of My Mother's Rules, A Practical Guide to Becoming an Emotional Genius. She joined us from the studios of KJZZ in Tempe, Arizona.